Welcome to the Curious Performer Podcast, the podcast for performers who want to grow. Are you ready? Ready to improve your show, to grow your business? Are you ready to build your brand? Then turn up the volume and get ready to hear from some of the best performers in the business. I'm your host, Keith Tussing, and I'll be asking the questions we're all curious about. Today's guest is a Michigan magician who has been performing since he was only 9 years old. During the second 10 years, he actually started to get good. He then spent 15 years performing as the lead magician for Chevrolet on their national auto show tours. Between shows, he now travels all over the world lecturing to his peers at some of the most respected magic conventions on the planet. Our guest is the owner of AssemblyShows.com, Michigan's premier school show company. He has created 12 educational and highly entertaining shows that are seen in elementary schools throughout the Midwest. This morning, we get the opportunity to hear from Doug Scheer. Welcome to the show, Doug.
Hey, good morning. It's such a pleasure to be here.
Oh, glad to have you this morning. We're going to get to delve into who you are and what you're about, and hopefully all of us learn a little bit this morning.
Don't make promises you can't fulfill.
All right. Well, man, let's talk about, you said you started performing at nine. How did that happen?
You know, it's so funny. I was telling a friend of mine this story a while back, and I got a magic kit when I was in kindergarten. I saw a magician in kindergarten. I did my talent show in fifth grade, and then I decided, hey, maybe I can actually make money doing birthday parties. So I created this character called Dillinger the Magician, and Dillinger was a horrible, murdering, thieving, gangster back like in the 60s. So for my birthday party magic show, I wore a cape and I had a top hat, and I came running out with a cap gun, and I opened the show by shooting the children. And then I threw a handkerchief over the cap gun. And I tossed the handkerchief into the air, and the gun vanished, and I took off my cape and I took off my hat, and then I started my show. but I knew you had to start with something big and something catchy, something that got their attention. But of course, we're going back out in 1972 or 73 when kids were still playing with cap guns, so it was no big deal. But can you imagine today a guy coming out with a cap gun? Oh my gosh. Oh, it's a horrible, horrible thing to think about. So I started doing birthday parties and I got paid $5. And then my dad would drive me around town. It was funny, like every Saturday for years, my dad would drive me and drop me off at some lady's house. And he would sit in the parking lot and read the newspaper. I'd do my magic show. He'd pick me up. We'd go to a different one. And sometimes we'd do two or three of those a day. Incredibly grateful for my dad to spend that kind of time. But it wasn't until I became a dad much later that I realized dad just had to get out of the house. It was a Saturday. He didn't want three kids screaming and yelling at him and his wife saying, honey, you got to fix the broken oven or mow the lawn or rake the leaves. So dad's like, oh, I got to take Doug to go do some shows. So we'll be gone for 3 hours together in the afternoon doing shows. And I mentioned this to my dad years later. He just laughed at me. He was like, yeah.
That's great.
That was part of it. And I fell into the trap of thinking close-up magic is something you could do to make money. And I know some guys are very successful at that, but I didn't want to work at a restaurant on a Tuesday night for 3 hours trying to deal with the waiters and waitresses and people who would say no to me, because it's a crushing blow that when someone says no, we don't want to see any magic. We all have fragile egos as performers, I think, and so the best way to not get your ego crushed was for me not to do restaurant magic. So I just stayed in the birthday party Cub Scout business for a long time. I went to college and I was brainwashed into thinking elementary school, middle school, high school, college, job, because that's what is planted in your brain since you're a little kid. What do you want to be when you grow up? Well, I always wanted to be a magician, and people would just laugh at that, and I remember studying the Mark Wilson course in magic ad in the back of Magic Magazine. Yeah. Of course, I just dreamt of owning that series. It was $70 in 1975. So that was way too much money to ask mom or dad for. So I dreamt of being, Mark Wilson and traveling the earth doing magic shows. then after college, I started interviewing for jobs on campus, and some guy from Kraft Macaroni and Cheese, the Kraft food company, said, "Hey, look, you're a really nice guy. We really like you, but this magic thing you're telling me about," he goes, why don't you try that first? Do that for a while. And if it doesn't work out, here's my card. Give me a call in 5 years and I'll hire you then. You know, so the job was probably going to be to stock the shelves at the local supermarket. Little did I know. So I went home and I said, "Hey, Mom and Dad, I interviewed for jobs." "Well, what kind of job did you get?" "Well, a magician. I'm going to be a magician." So while all my friends were off, you know, getting apartments and taking these jobs in exotic towns like St. Louis, I stayed home at Mom and Dad's and I just worked on my business. And back in 1987, I was making $5,000 a month just doing magic shows. The problem was I was spending about $4,700 a month on my business, you know, so making $300 a month was not exactly the best job out of college, you know. But then the day came where my dad finally said to me, because every day he was saying, "Hey, did you make any money today? Did you make any money today? You know, how much did you make? How much did you make this week?" Finally, the day came where I looked at Dad and say, "Hey, Dad, how much money did you make today? How much money did you make this week?" You know, because I started making more money than my dad's like, "Okay, it's time for you to leave." You know, so what started out as a joke kind of backfired on me. And then I bought a condo and moved out, and then the career was on a roll. But I tell you this, it was never about money. It sounds like it was by that story, but it never was. It was just about being happy. I remember thinking, gosh, if I get a trailer in, you know, the bad part of town, I can probably live, you know, on $1,000 a month, you know, and if I can just make, you know, $15,000-$16,000 a year, I'll be happy. I'll be driving my Ford Escort around town, doing my little school shows, you know, and make a little bit of money. I remember breaking it down, going, "Well, gosh, that's only two schools a week. I can do that," you know. So it just developed from there, you know, because I loved passionately what I did. You know, and the money was great. You know, right out of college, you're driving into a school and they're paying me $350 for a 45-minute show. It was like I was driving around town collecting money, you know. And then as more and more people found out about the show, you know, the success and the nicer car comes with it. So it's just a snowball effect. It's just a matter of loving what you do and then just keep on doing it through the hurdles and through the ups and the downs. And so it worked out pretty well. So what'd you even ask me? What was the question?
I love that. The story with the gun is so 1970s.
You know, it's funny. To expound on that, I did a trick called Jumbo Sidekick for years, which is a trick where you give a kid a pistol and he shoots at a table and he hits a flower and knocks it over. He knocks the tablecloth over. He knocks the table over and, you know, all kinds of things happen. And this kid's, you know, firing this gun. So I was in a bad part of town. This is probably 30 years ago. Right. And I'm doing this trick and I had done it all along in my school shows. And as I'm packing up the show, the principal comes on and goes, "Hey, kids, we had a good time in today's magic show, but you saw the magician used a gun," you know, and my heart sank as I'm hearing this announcement. He came in afterwards and he turned out to be one of my greatest supporters. He's like, "Doug, I know it was okay, but you can't do that anymore," you know, and the oblivious magician in me, "But this is a good trick, but it's funny," you know. So I had to adapt that dramatically after that. He's like, especially in these rougher neighborhoods, because these kids go home and, you know, guns are a part of their life. You can't be showing kids how fun and funny guns can be. So it was a good lesson. And that principal, like I said, became one of my greatest supporters. Later at a different school, he gave me a big 3-ring binder one day after an assembly show and said, "Hey, I need your life skills show." And I said, "I don't have a life skills character show." He goes, "You will in 1 year. This is everything you need." And he handed me this binder of information. He said, "I want to book you December 14th next year." This is like, you know, maybe 11 months away. I said, "Okay." You know? So I went home and I dug through all my junk that I had in the basement, scraping together props that might fit these messages, and turned out to be one of my most successful shows as character traits and as proper behavior became a really big thing in elementary schools, because schools used to just teach, you know, the basics, reading, writing, and arithmetic. And then as the years progressed and the two-family home started proliferating, kids weren't getting manners. They weren't getting proper social behavior, you know. And then as the internet came around, they're bullying each other by yelling at each other when they're playing mm-hmm. their video games and calling each other names. So though that show became incredibly popular because the schools were suddenly tasked with making children not just smart, but making them decent human beings, mm-hmm. you know. And that's a big part of what I do in my assembly shows nowadays too.
Yeah, it is so true, the change. I mean, I've done some substitute teaching in the classroom, and it's like, you've got to be kidding with the behavior. You just, it's astounding.
I had a principal tell me once, he just got off the phone with a parent, and he had called the parent and said, listen, your kid is like in my office every day. He's beating kids up on the playground. He's not paying attention in class. He's nothing but trouble. And the parent basically said, look, I know. I get him from 4 p.m. until 8 a.m. every day. You get him the other 8 hours. And just hung up on him. it's like, this is the kind of support I get from these parents, Doug. It's like, you know.
It's so crazy.
Difficult. It's crazy. Of course, not every parent's like that, but there's always the few that stick out in your mind. Mm-hmm. And you wonder why this child's a troubled child, you know. Who knows where he is nowadays. But this was again, 25, 30 years ago.
Oh, it's crazy right now at school. I am so glad my kids are done.
Oh.
Done. Well, that's good. Now, as you talked about the beginning of that and the start of that and moving from birthday guy to school guy, what maybe did you have early struggles or what some things that, you know, kept you going or things that got in the way as you made that progression?
You know, a lot of good things happened to me. Yeah, I look back on it. You know, I had a very supportive family, a very supportive mom and dad letting me live in their house, you know, for 5 years. I got out of school really at the right time. And there were a couple things that happened with me. I was just doing not even library shows. I was doing birthday parties and Cub Scouts and some malls here and there, whatever I could get my hands on. And then in 1987, it was a sesquicentennial in Michigan, which means the 150th birthday. And Harry Blackstone Jr. was hired as the figurehead to come in and, you know, be the press guy going, hey, we've hired 20 magicians from around the state and they're going to go into malls and they're going to be our sesquicentennial magicians doing these magic shows. So Harry came in and he met us and greeted us. And so listen, I know you guys are good. Your job is to produce this flag in your show, you know, and do one trick about Michigan sesquicentennial. And that's all you got to do. So I did the show in a mall and this teacher came up to me and said, hey, that was kind of fun. You know, you did this little show about Michigan. Can you do a show about the Constitution? And I said, well, why the heck would I do that? She said, well, next year is the 200th birthday of the Constitution. And I said, well, maybe let me think about this. You know, she goes, well, I'll book it if you can, you know. And I said, okay. So I went home and I started researching and I pulled this stuff together and I put together this little Uncle Sam's Comedy Jam. No, it wasn't even called that. It was called, that's the title today. It was called The Constitutional Conjuring Show, which is a horrible name. Who wants to book the Constitutional Conjuring Show? I mean, God, that sounds horrible. But she booked it. I sent out, so I got some flyers made. I mailed them out. I hit the market at the exact time. All these schools had to teach the Constitution to elementary school kids. And God forbid, how are you going to do that? You know, you're talking about the different articles and it's ridiculous. The three branches of government, all those fun things that make up the Constitution. So it jumped off like wildfire. And I think that first year alone, I think I was doing maybe my two schools a week, you know, and now I can get my motor home and I can live in the rough part of town. But from that, there was a newspaper article done on me. The people at my local utility called me and said, hey, I see you're using magic to teach kids. We've got this electrical energy safety message we're trying to get to schools. Can you write a show for us too? Sure. So they gave me this giant costume, this Louis the Lightning Bug costume. It was a huge mascot. I wasn't to wear it, but I was going to be traveling with this mascot. I would dress up as the energy guy and Louis would be there and singing and dancing and waving his hands around. And I had to incorporate Louis in this magic show in some way. And all of this happened at the same time when this agency got a hold of me and said, hey, listen, the Geo Metro, the Geo line of cars for Chevy has just come out, and we need a Geo magician. We need this. Can you do the auto shows? Yeah, sure. And little did I know, but they had already pre-auditioned me for this because a local Boy Scout group that was sponsored by General Motors. GM called me and said, hey, we sponsored this local Boy Scout group. Can you come and do a magic show for them? I'm like, yeah, sure. Little did I know, the biggest of the big wigs of Chevrolet were in the audience, not to sponsor these Cub Scouts or Boy Scouts, but to watch me do my show. They were smart enough to realize I'm a 22-year-old kid and I'd be nervous as heck, you know, if I'm doing my show for these executives. So they sat back, they watched me do my show for these Cub Scouts and Boy Scouts. And 2 weeks later, I got the call from the agency saying, hey, listen, you're hired. I'm like, for what? I didn't even know what it was. So they sent me on the road doing these auto shows. I was the Geo Metro magician. The Geo was a line of cars. They had the Tracker and the little cars. They were these little, I think Suzuki made them or something, but Chevrolet marketed them. They only were around for a couple of years because they were little boxes on wheels and people loved them. They were great little cars from what you got. But that just ballooned into multiple tours for Chevy, GMC truck. I went to Canada, did some stuff for them up there, but all over around the country doing shows. And I was working probably 100 days a year on the road for them while doing these school shows back home. And so I didn't have a lot of obstacles. The road was paved with gold for me. It really was. And I think back on my trials and tribulations, and there really weren't many of them. Mm. I was really fortunate, very fortunate. And, you know, it's tough. It's tough now for anybody to get into doing what I do, the school market, because there's so many people now that are so triggered by so many things. And I'll give you an example. I'm going off in 30 different directions here. So bring me back, ring me in if you need to. I do a show called Diversity Circus, you know, which teaches the kids all about being fair, aware, including and respecting others. And a principal called me and said, listen, we got some complaints. Complaint number one, Diversity Circus. We don't like using the word circus with the word diversity because it's not a circus by any means. You know, complaint number two was I was using hats from different cultures, everything from African tribal hats to Ushankas and Kufiyas. You know, these are the traditional wear you see people in Saudi Arabia wearing. And I put it on kids and they thought I was culturally appropriating. And I'm like, if a businessman goes to Saudi Arabia, he's going to be wearing the same garb because it protects from the blowing sand, for Pete's sakes. But that was wrong. That was very insensitive. And I didn't get enough minorities to help out in the show, even though, you know, the school I was in was filled with minorities, and I got Russian kids and African-American kids and Chinese kids and Indian kids, but there weren't enough of the right kind. So it turns out to nowadays, you try and do something wonderful and worthwhile in the schools, and I'm just trying to teach the kids how to get along, and there's someone on the sidelines with a notepad, and it's that vocal minority. You know, they go running to the principal, and I talked to the principal. I said, you know, well, this is the reason why I do these things. This is how I've done it for the past 20 years. You know, you said you have some suggestions for how I can make this better and improve it. No, I'm just telling you what they said. Like, oh boy. All right. if you don't have any solutions for me, I'm going to continue on. And honestly, if I continue to get comments like that, then I'll weigh them for what they're worth and possibly change and adapt my show. But there's a quote that I live by, and the quote is, I don't know the key to success, but the key to failure is trying to please everybody.
Mm, you know? That's good.
And so you're going to take your arrows along the way, but you have to take them with a grain of salt. And someone said, listen, if you would never take advice from a person, why would you take criticism from that person? You know, why would you take criticism from someone you would never go to for advice?
That's good. It's really good.
You know, because you don't know the person's background or history. You don't know what they've been through or what their current issue is. We do a show called Superhero Math where the character, it's a two-person show where she basically drives me crazy during the show. And, you know, and I get frustrated with her. Well, this woman who was going through horrible divorce problems comes up to us after the show and goes, I don't like the way you treat each other. I don't like the way you berate each other. I don't like that. You know, but she was living in a real situation with her husband. And, mm-hmm. you know, my heart was open for her. And my assistant and I really gave some serious consideration to what we did in the show. We tweaked some of the words a little bit to make sure they were very acceptable. But this woman, after doing the show for multiple years, saw this in the show, but it was because of her life experiences. It's nothing we had to really adapt or change so much. It was her life experiences coloring the show in a way that she thought was negative. You know, so it's good feedback. It is good feedback, and I welcome it at all times, but you got to take it for what it's worth. My dad's saying is, I'll give your comments the consideration they deserve, which pretty much means it probably deserve no consideration.
It is so true about the world we live in today that you can be trying to do something wonderful. You can be trying to do something encouraging, and somebody is going to look at that and have, you know, undue criticism about it. And there's not a whole lot you can do when that happens. You just keep going.
You smile, you nod, you thank them, and you move on. Yeah. You know? And if they come to you, in an appreciative way and in a soft way, without screaming and yelling and berating you, then you take it for what it's worth. You know, you thank them and you move on, because you know what, you're going to remember that a lot longer than they will. They're going to get their peace of mind. Instead, they're going to walk away and you're out of their life. So,
yeah,
don't let it beat you up. You know, you can't let it beat you up.
That's so true. The one thing throughout that story that I hear you say that I think is super important for everybody to pull out of that is just say yes. So many times somebody came to you and said, "Hey, Doug, I need a show about this." And you didn't go, "Well, I don't know if I can do that or not, or that'd be really difficult." You just said yes. Mm-hmm. And it is. I think that's important.
Yeah, in improv class, because I took some improv classes back in high school, improv is yes and. Mm-hmm. Someone comes to you and you go, "Why, look at that turtle." You don't walk up and go, "That's not a turtle, that's a rock." You go, "Yes, but that turtle, I believe he's petrified." You know? So you say yes, and then you add on, and you continue to do that. And I think that's a really good rule in life, too. You know, in business, yes and. You know, or you say yes, and then you give it some serious consideration. You can always go back later and say no. You know,
right.
But if you say no immediately, it just basically slams the door on any kind of opportunity that might come your way.
Yeah, and I think we miss opportunities by being, you know, a little apprehensive instead of just taking that attitude of, "I can do this, and I'm going to work on it. I'm going to make this happen." I think that just listening to your story, that's a huge part of your success. Is just being willing to say, "I can do that. I'm going to go out there and fix it."
Oh, absolutely. You know, and that's not to say you're not going to be afraid when you jump into something brand new, you know, but you get an opportunity. I remember having shows where I was petrified to do, and then I would go and do them and it'd be a success, you know. And another quote is basically, what's on the other side of fear? You know, nothing. It's like fear is a thin line. All you got to do is jump over that line. And then when you do, nothing bad's ever happened in my life, you know, that makes me think, you know, fear is a bad thing. I tell my kids the same thing. It's like, I know it's scary to do this. I know it's scary to do this presentation in college, but prepare for it. Jump in. And you might crash and burn, but guess what? That's what college is all about. I always tell my kids, too, the same thing. You have to be bad before you can be good. And that's something we got to teach children in elementary schools as well. Mm. You know, you can't just sit down at a piano and start playing music. You got to be bad. You know, everybody who's a musician, I don't care who your favorite musician is, the popular person of the day, they were bad before they were really good. So don't think you're going to be that good. Even these kids that always want to be on TikTok and YouTube, you know, they get these millions of hits in these viral videos. Well, guess what? They probably have 1,000 videos that just crashed and burned. And then they got 2 that became viral. And then they became these huge successes. The kids look at it and think, it's an overnight success. I want to be just like her, you know. But even with the school shows, you know, and people call me all the time and say, "Listen, I want to get the school show racket," which really annoys me because it's not a racket. It's a serious business. You know, I'm a birthday party guy. I go, "Well, good luck," because you cannot. Most birthday party magic shows that you do in a living room for 25 kids do not translate to an auditorium full of 400 children. You know, you've got to recreate your show. You might have some hysterical, funny routines, but the props got to be bigger. The set's got to be bigger. The music's got to be louder. You know, you got a lot you have to build and develop into this. That's not to say you can't do the occasional school show for your birthday party guys. Some guys do, and they're very successful at it. But the ones that really want to make a living at it, you've got to embrace the environment. I mean, rule number one in any kind of communication is know your audience. You know, not only knowing your ages and, you know, what their mental capabilities are for grasping information, but also know your venue and know where you're playing. I hear complaints all the time from school show bookers, like PTAs and principals, saying we had this guy and he was doing this thing with a, you know, half a 3x5 card. It's like, we couldn't see what he was doing and he spent 10 minutes on it. And it's just, dude,
you know? Oh gosh.
You want to do that? Yeah. We have the technology, broadcast it on a screen or something. Right. But yeah.
Let's talk about that for a minute. Somebody walks up to you, Doug, and says, "Hey Doug, I really want to get into doing school show programs." Yeah. What would be your advice to them?
You have to be 100% completely unique. You cannot do what everybody else is doing. And a show is more than just lining up a number of routines or effects or balloons or puppets. A show has a beginning and a middle and an end. And a show also has a plot and it has characters, you know, and it has a subplot too. This is something a lot of guys miss. They come out and they start their show and they go beginning, middle, end. Great. But there's no texture to the show. There's nothing happening in the background. And the best example I can give you of what I'm talking about is watch any situational comedy on TV. There's always the main plot. But then there's always some other mini plot going on, maybe a couple mini plots going on, subplots happening in the show, you know, that don't necessarily tie into the main one, but there's multiple stories happening. And there's no reason why you can't do that in your school shows, too. A great example, and the reason why a lot of magicians will borrow a dollar bill and tear it up or burn it and then find it in a shoe or a orange later, is because that creates a running theme through your show. You're doing your magic show, and then periodically you go back and you make jokes about the missing $20 bill or the missing $10 bill or $5 bill. And of course, the value decreases as you call back to it. And finally, you wrap up that subplot in your show by finding that dollar bill somewhere. But that adds a tremendous amount of texture to your show. And I'm not saying everybody should do that. There's many other ways that you can do that. Any kind of running gag, there's something called the Lotta Bowl or the Lotta Bowl, which is a bowl you put on the side of your stage and you walk over and you dump out water. And then you go back 2 minutes later, you dump out more water and this water keeps pouring out of this bowl. It's a nice little theme or a subplot you can have in the course of your show. And it kind of becomes a highlight sometimes. When I used to do that, people would always ask me, "What about that water?" I'm like, "Well, that wasn't the main part of the show." but it was. In my character education show, we're teaching character traits. But in the course of the show, this troublemaking antagonist, my partner in my show, she wants to know what's inside this box that's on stage. So her entire goal, the entire show, is to get inside that box and find out what's inside the box, because I told the kids it was the world's greatest present. Throughout my show, am I teaching of character traits and bully-proofing? She's in the background with this subplot, this mission of hers going on. And that adds a lot to the show, because I've got one goal. She's got another goal. The kids want the troublemaker to win. You know, they do. In fact, I've been criticized by principals. "Can you make that troublemaker character not so lovable?" You know, and I'm like, well, she learns a really good lesson in this show, you know. Yeah, I think that's a really big key to being successful, not just in the school market, but in anything, be it birthday parties or anything, is to build your show that way. But you also have to have a completely unique look. A lot of guys have the exact same backdrops. And I got nothing against the guys that go and buy the backdrops off the shelf. You're doing a lot to improve how your show looks. But then when you compare websites side by side, if a booker's out there, they're like, "Gosh, that guy's got the same look as this guy. That guy's got the same logo as that guy. This guy's got, you know, the same tricks." You got to customize everything, because when they go to the website, they want to see photographs they're not going to see anywhere else. And I think that really makes you stand out. And the one who stands out the most is the one who's going to get the bookings, I think. Otherwise, we're just cookie cutters of each other. And then you're competing on price, and you can never compete on price. Someone's always going to be cheaper than you, you know? So, and of course there's a lot of truth in raising your prices and keeping your price high, because there's a lot more value. It's perceived value. In fact, when this whole COVID thing hit, you and I are talking about this in early 2021, when we're still in the depths of this. But when the whole thing happened about a year ago, I have an agent who books my school shows. She said, look, we're going to turn you virtual. You're going to turn all your shows to virtual. Okay, good. We probably have to lower the price. She goes, no, we're going to raise the prices. We're going to raise the prices. We're going to charge more because this is a bigger, brand new thing. And it's been wildly successful, surprisingly so. But it speaks to price, people to create price with quality. Now, of course, you have to deliver. You know, you better be getting 5-star reviews the entire way, because if you get some of those 2-star reviews and people see that, they're not going to want to pay that price. So it's a matter of, but you have to be, you can't overcharge either. I mean, if you're just starting off in this business, you've got to start at a price that reflects that. Or you simply explain to your client, listen, my cost is $1,000, but I'm going to do it for $400 because it's a brand new show and I'm just working out the bugs. And I want you to understand where I'm at on this, but I'm going to, you know, start a little low. And then I'm going to raise my price as accordingly. We've got a young magician in town who's wildly successful, and he got out of college and he looked at every one of us out there making a living at it. He just jumped right in. He set his price exactly where our prices were, which is really ballsy to do, but he is a one in a million kind of guy who is an incredibly strong performer, incredibly strong. I look at him when he was 22 years, when I was 22 years old, and there's no way, you know, I could have competed side by side with this kid. So he charges the same thing we do. He dove right in, but he's got the chops to do it. And he's been able to maintain that price too. So to be successful in this business, of course, you have to put food on the table, you know. And I think there's a big difference between guys that put food on their table and guys that do it as a hobby, you know. And I think there's a big mindset there that if you get to go to your 9-to-5 job, well, first of all, if you have a 9-to-5 job, you're not going to do school shows. Because schools meet 9-to-5, you know, you're going to be the weekend guy. If you can break away and do some school shows here and then, all the power to you, it's good money. But I think there's a mindset in the guys that are real pros and they set their prices accordingly, as opposed to the hobbyists. And that's not to berate the hobbyists in any way. I mean, I compare myself side by side to some of these guys that do this for a hobby and they blow me out of the water. And thank God they're not doing this full time because they can crush me. They will completely crush me. You know, so I'm like, stay away. Let me do this. So,
yeah, I totally agree with the idea that somebody that you, when you've got to make your mortgage with what you're doing with Magic's a different thing than, yeah, a little boat money or something. Definitely a different mindset.
You know, it's frightening to raise your prices, but a lot of guys have the packages. You know, they do. That's a smart thing to do. Someone comes to your website and you're $1,000, they can't afford $1,000. Well, they can have package B or C or D, you know. So now you're going to get what you're paying for, you know. That's not to say that your package D price is any worse than your package A price. You may just throw in everything in package A price for package D and just you're working for less money and they get the same show. But what do they know? Hey, now you're the nice guy. Wow, he did all this extra stuff we weren't expecting.
That's good. Yeah. Okay, what about the idea, a buzzword that you hear all the time is branding. Branding. How do you feel about that? How do you use that in your communication, on your website, things like that?
Yeah, people ask me about that. They say, how can you do 12 different school shows? How can you be the expert in the environment and the expert in bullyproofing, the expert in diversity? How can you do that? Don't you have to brand yourself as the expert in character education? I said, yeah, you could. You know, I said, or you can brand yourself as the school show expert, as the go-to guy, you know. And that's kind of what I tried to do. I did, this is way back when I first had my Uncle Sam show. It was like my first show in this. The teachers loved it. The kids loved it. And on the way out the door, I handed my brochure to the teacher who paid me. And I said, hey, listen, I've got 4 other shows that I do. You do? You have more shows? So she drags me into the office with the principal and sits down and goes, hey, we just had a great show with this guy. And look at his brochure. He's got 3 or 4 other shows that we can have. And he looked at my headline. Now, my name is Doug Shear. So my business name was Shear Magic Productions. He looked at the logo on the top of my page and he said, oh, no. We've had magicians before. We don't want any magic shows. But this guy was really good. He did some magic in the show, but it wasn't a magic show. Yeah, but it says here, Sheer Magic Productions. These are all magic shows. We don't want any more magic shows. And that sticks in my brain like a flashbulb going off to this very day. So I ran home and I'm like, crap, I got to throw these brochures away because people are perceiving me as a guy who pulls bunny rabbits out of top hats. You know, not that there's anything wrong with that. But I honestly, God, if I did birthday party magic shows again, I would be the guy in the cape, the top hat, and the bunny rabbit. I would be. And you guys would hate me because I know you're all trying to break away from that. But I would embrace that. I would dress up as Mandrake the Magician because children today still think that's a magician. Yep. You know, look at Ed Alonso. Ed Alonso has been wildly successful and he's been doing that character in the adult comedy clubs, you know, for years now. So why not redo it in the school show market? Sure, it's cheesy and corny, but it's what people expect. So, you know, give it to them that way. It's perfectly fine. I went off on a tangent and now I lost track. I need coffee. I stopped drinking coffee, you know, and I just can't keep my brain straight anymore. Yeah.
We were talking about branding and you were talking about changing from magic to something else. Right.
So I ran home and I changed my name to Sheer Genius Productions or Sheer Genius Assembly Shows because my name Sheer fit perfectly with Sheer Magic or Sheer Genius. So I redid all my brochures and advertising and now nobody even knows I'm a magician when they book me. In fact, I remember doing a show at one school and this teacher came up to me afterwards, or a PTA lady, and she said, oh my gosh, your show was great. In fact, she says, your magic tricks were even better than our magician that we had last week. And I'm like, that's hysterical because I am a magician. I just didn't tell you that. I don't say it to this day. If you go to my website, you're not going to see the word magic really listed any more than once or twice on my entire, you know, 35-page website. It's not a search term because I don't want to be known as a magician because, again, if I'm a magician, I got to compete with price, you know, and everybody clumps us all together. So my brand is to be a school show expert. I even tell my clients, I go, look, if there's something I don't offer, if you want a guy that plays guitar, if you want some belly dancers, I go, call me up. I got friends, you know, and I know who's good and I know who I'm not going to refer you to. I'm not going to say anything bad about anybody, but, you know, I'll give you a list of my buddies and you're going to love them. And I do that too. So not only have I become the go-to guy for a lot of these schools for every year doing a show for them, multiple shows, but I'm also the guy they call and say, listen, we need a guy that talks about Black History Month. Who do you know? Do you know an Abraham Lincoln character? Yeah, sure. I can help you out. You know, we scratch each other's backs and it's all perfectly fine. But to get back to your question about being successful in any market, you have to have multiple shows because if you've got a client who loves you, they just saw your show. You know, if you've got a client who loves you and wants to book you again and again, if you've got four shows, you can take them in the course of one school year. And I've got some schools that will book me two and three times a year. Not only do they know they're getting a quality product, but I also give them a discount. Hey, you book me three times, I'm going to give you $200 off the third show. Oh, really? That's great. You know, it's a matter of having a handful of customers you can rely on entirely and completely. You don't have to have brand new customers all the time because the hardest part in this job is finding a new client. Hmm. If you've got clients that love you, you just keep massaging them. With 12 shows, I can do two shows a year in a kid's elementary career, and they will never see the same show twice. Mm. You know, by the time that kindergartner turns into sixth grader, he's gone. Now I just start all over again. And that's been an incredibly powerful secret to me because I send out my email blast to my regular customers. Hey, it's Doug. And they'll basically say, hey, send me a list of stuff we've had. And I'll pick from the rest that we haven't. You know, and it's that easy of a sale. It's really great.
That's good. That's good.
Yeah. It's nice.
What about today? You know, in today's world, social media is such a thing, you know, such a big part of business. How do you use that in your business?
I've been gabbing a lot for every one of your questions. I'm going to give you an answer. I don't.
You don't.
I don't use social media. No, I use social media to go on there and cause problems with my opinions about things that people yell at me.
I've seen some of that.
Oh, yeah, I'm good that way, right? Stir up the pot and watch it explode. I'm very opinionated about a certain number of topics, but I'm also pretty well educated in it, which people will disagree with. No, I don't use social media. I've got a Facebook page for my business and I post stuff on there. And my, you know, my web designer guy's like, you got to post more on social media. I go, but I'm working. I'm already working. You know, do I need to do this 10 times a day? There's this Gary Vaynerchuk or Vanderchuk guy or whatever. He says you got to create 60 new pieces of content every day for social media. I'm like, no, I'll do 60 maybe in 3 years. Okay. So I haven't figured it out yet. You know, you got to be on Twitter. You got to be on this. You got to be on that. I'm like, you know what? In the course of my, here's the one thing I do. I do tell the teachers, hey, if you love my show, please post a photograph on Twitter. You know, my assembly shows, you know, is my Twitter handle at assembly shows. And then they'll go on there and they'll do that. So they become my trumpet tutors. You know, we just had Doug Shear. Here's a photograph. It was fantastic. Now they've got 30 other teachers that follow them. And of course I go on there and comment, oh my God, it was so much fun. Your kids were great. I hope to come back with one of my other shows, you know, and that's how I use social media. I simply try and track what people are saying about me and let them push it for me. Mm-hmm. So that's the one thing I recommend. And it always happens, you know, early in the show, I mention it because then it gives the teachers an idea. Oh, I'm going to take a picture. If you mention this at the end of the show, they've got no photographs of your show. They didn't have their cameras out, you know, but I mentioned it early in the show. Then I mention it again at the end of the show. And it works. That also works for me.
That's great advice. I mean, that is let your audience promote you is going to be way better than you having to do that self. And then you also don't have the issue of creating the content. The content's done for you. And I love that. That's a great idea.
Yeah. It's easy. It's really easy. Time for a commercial break. And nobody has ever complained that I'm promoting myself on this show. You know, I'm not, I'm just saying, hey, if you love the show, you know, please tell your friends about it. You know, I've got a buddy that's, you know, his magic word is, and I'll change the name, you know, yeah. The magic word is Bob is available for birthday parties, banquets, Cub Scouts, and blah, 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 blah. You know, the magic word is Bob.com, you know, that kind of stuff. We've heard those jokes before, which are funny, you know, but you can't overdo them because people say, oh my gosh, this is an entire commercial. You know, so people get annoyed by that. Now, I got to tell you, I took my son to the Worldwide Wrestling Federation show or something. He wanted to go to a live wrestling match or something. So we paid our $40 a ticket and we sat in the bleachers. And you know what that was? It was some guy coming out, beating up some guy for about 2.5 minutes. And then it was a screen filled with TV commercials for the toys and their merchandise and their DVDs and their books, you know, and that went on for 8 minutes. Then out comes another guy to beat somebody else up. Then it went right back to TV commercials. And it just made me crazy that I paid $40 to watch their TV commercials. So you don't want to be that guy, you know, although he's been very successful doing that. That's for sure.
Talking about other performers, as a performer in this profession, who's somebody you think people are more than one somebody, people that you think we should know? If you're going to be good at this, here's somebody you should be aware of.
Boy, oh boy. You mean actually in the school show market, in my particular genre of
it
show?
Doesn't have to be. I mean, you know, anyway, it can be all over the map, whatever you think.
I got to tell you, I read a lot. I read a lot of books. I think biographies are autobiographies are even better. Are fantastic of performers, anybody from Ozzy Osbourne to movie producers. I mean, because you basically read about their trials and tribulations as they became who they are. And you realize a lot of them had a really tough time of it. You know, in fact, I could recommend some books if you want me to. Howie Mandel's book, I think it's called Don't Touch Me. It's a fantastic story. It's very funny. It's basically the story of his life and how the kind of stuff he went through being a stand-up comedian. Jay Leno's got a book out too. Leading With My Chin, I think is the name of that book. It's a really old book, but it talks about how his career and all the crazy bookings he had to go through. There's a book called I Killed, which is short 1, 2, 3 page stories from the top comedians from around the world and all of their horror stories. You know, so you read these things, you go, oh, some lady yelled at me about the word circus. It's not that bad. It isn't that bad. Just like it really gives you a perspective and you go, oh, this guy went through what? You know, Howie Mandel talks about how is this We don't have any children on this show, do we?
I doubt it.
He was booked to be the act during an orgy. He gets to this guy's really expensive mansion and, yeah, okay, you're going to go in that room. Everyone's going to be taking a little break and you're going to be the act. So he goes out there and there's people lying on the floor naked, you know, to take a break. He's doing his act. And then after he left, they just resume their activities. You got to be kidding me. But this true story, it's nuts. There's a guy named Jerry Weintraub who was a really successful movie producer. He produced The Karate Kid, Ocean's 11. Yeah, I can go on, but you got to read his book. It's called, I think it's When I Stop Talking, You'll Know I'm Dead, or I'll Be Dead When... When I Stop Talking, You'll Know I'll Be Dead. Jerry Weintraub is the guy's name. And he was the personal manager, not the business manager, the personal manager for guys like Frank Sinatra and Elvis Presley and Bob Denver. And he talks about how he took Bob Denver from a nobody in Greenwich Village playing a guitar on a bar stool to a superstar. And those are things you have to know, because you're like, all of these lessons can be applicable on a micro level, you know, to what we do. There's one story he talks about, Elvis Presley. It's a great story. Elvis came to him and said, listen, your job is to make sure I never play to an empty seat. That's your job. So they sell out this arena in some town. I can't remember where it was. And Elvis goes, hey, we sold this out like in a day. Let's add a matinee. And Jerry's like, I don't know if a matinee is going to sell, Elvis. Just do it. Let's add a matinee. Well, they only sold like 70% tickets. So there's 30% of these empty seats remaining. And Jerry's like, oh my God, I'm going to lose my job. Elvis told me I could never play to an empty seat. So guess what he did? He didn't give tickets away or anything like that. He went across the street to the prison. There was a prison like around the corner. He sits down with a warden with a big box of cash and goes, look, I need help. I need to remove these seats from the stadium. Oh, so I need 30 of your guys to go over there. We got the tools. They spent all morning long removing all these seats, packing them behind the arena. And then after the matinee show was over, they put the seats back in. So Elvis didn't play to any empty seats at all. Elvis came to him afterwards and goes, you know, the energy wasn't really there with that matinee show. Let's not do those again. Because it was only 70% full, but he didn't know that. But talk about a genius solution to a real serious problem, right? So a book like that, and that's from, you know, of course it's in our genre, it's in the entertainment business, but what a great solution. You know, so I reckon, and it's a really entertaining book. There's Frank Sinatra stories in there. I got to read it again. I read it maybe 10 years ago. I got to read it again. So many good stories and so much great advice. Taking a guy named Bob Denver, who nobody ever heard of, you know, whose album wasn't going to be ready when he promised. And what did he do with it? You know, and he posted billboards all over Hollywood and all over LA with this Bob Denver. No one ever heard of him. Who is this guy? Who is this guy? It's got a Christmas album coming out, you know? So the hype was so big by the time his Christmas album came out, people were snapping it up and he was a nobody. So genius marketing stuff, genius personal management stuff, genius business stuff, really good stuff.
Mm. I love that you're a reader. I don't think we have enough people that do that today in today's world. I'm an avid reader myself, and read way outside of our business. I mean, reading business books, reading biographies, I think there's benefit to all of that.
Well, you know, look, I think about Jeff McBride, who's one of our well-known magicians for those outside the magic. You know, Jeff did all kind of a huge career. He still has a great career. He's a teacher now. But Jeff blended magic and sleight of hand, top-notch sleight of hand, with kabuki theater, okay? It's crazy. It's like blending kayaking with folding your laundry. It just doesn't work. But Jeff studied kabuki theater and he built this costume and created this act around it. So you're right to know stuff outside our genre is incredibly important, because if you can put that together, you got something nobody can touch, and you know, your marketability shoots through the moon, because suddenly you have got your light bulb moment. You've got your career paved ahead of you.
You mentioned a little earlier the idea of, you know, keeping your clients that you have versus going out and getting new clients? What are some of the things you do, Doug, besides putting on a great show? That's assumed. What are some things you do to maintain that client relationship?
You know, in the schools, it's incredibly hard. And the reason why is because a lot of the PTAs, parent teacher associations, are the ones that book me. And then, you know, you get this lady who loves you and books you 2 years in a row, and then her kids leave the school or she passes the torch to somebody else. Now you're basically starting from scratch, you know. So happily in the schools, you know, there's three kinds of people that book you. There's the principals, there's the teachers, and there's the PTA moms and dads. The teachers are critically important because they're going to be at a school for 10, 15 years. And they're the ones that are going to recommend you to the new PTA people. You know, when they get your brochure, and I say that, you know, with spite in my face, because they don't get brochures anymore. Any brochures that show up at a school get thrown into the garbage. The internet was supposed to make things easier for us, but it didn't. It made it much, much more difficult. I used to send out brochures and I would get just inundated with phone calls as soon as those brochures hit desks. Now you send a brochure out and they go right into the garbage. I don't even bother sending out mailings or brochures anymore because they can't even get past the secretary. You know, they really can't. So those go in the trash. So if you can get the teachers to know who you are, and one thing that I do after every one of my shows is I have a tiny little postcard that says, "Hey, thank you." And I go into the office and I say, "Hey, listen, I've got these little thank you notes that I want the teachers to have because they took time out of their day today and their kids were wonderful. And can I put them in your mailboxes?" "Oh, no. We'll do that for you. That's so nice of you. It's so generous of you." And all I'm doing is shoving their mailbox full of advertising materials. But it's disguised as a thank you card, you know? And so those teachers take the thank you card and they shove it in their desk. And then, you know, they might look at it the next year. But now they know who I am. They got my name, address, and phone number, you know, and they can recommend me to other schools. And teachers turn into principals. Teachers turn into principals. And so many of my jobs are, "Hey, Doug, my name is so-and-so. You don't know me, but I was a teacher at so-and-so school for 10 years and we had you every year. I want to bring you to my school now." A school I'd never been to. So it's kind of a snowball type thing where a little bit of everything. Remembering marketing to the parents is very difficult. You can do it, you know, to a limited extent, but that's not going to keep you going for long. Otherwise, all your dollars are being thrown down the drain. So nowadays, it's word of mouth recommendations and it's referrals, you know. I mean, of course, a lot of guys are pumping money into their search engine optimization, which is probably a really good thing because, I mean, I've always told my wife, if I want someone to mow my lawn, I'm not going to save the brochures I get in the mail. I'm going to go online. Lawn cutting places and services near me, you know. Yeah. So the internet's hurt me more in terms of marketing than it's helped. And I think a lot of performers have seen the same thing. So you got to just guerrilla market still. Go back to the tried and true ways of getting the name out there. Mm. You know, and I get that idea about stuff in mailboxes from I remember reading a book from a guy who was a car salesman, like the most popular car salesman ever. He would take stacks of business cards and go to football games and throw them in the air and they would just land on people. And his goal was to get one guy to pick up that business card and, you know, take it home and give him a call. But this guy did that. He spread his name everywhere. It was always closing, constantly closing. And you don't want to be that guy who's doing that. But I think if you've got a product that will speak for itself, your good product's closing the next sale automatically. Mm-hmm. But again, it's a matter of having a next sale because you have to have multiple products. That goes back to what I talked about earlier.
Right, right. Yeah. What about continuing education? You know, I know that you've lectured at several different places and different conferences. What are some conferences that people should be aware of that you would recommend they attend?
Yeah, you know, I got buddies that run some conferences. So full disclosure, I'm friends with Ken Scott. Ken's got a great conference he's been running. Ken's a really good guy and does some really smart, smart stuff. And I admire everything about him. He's got a conference that happens down in Georgia every year. I hope it comes back once this whole lockdown ends. Mark Daniel is a friend of mine, too. And I've spoken at the Kadabra conference. They got one called CACS, you know, and that's a children's performer, you know, conference. I wish that Children's Performer Conference was around when I was younger. I live in Michigan, so I would go to the Abbott's convention every couple of years. I was never a big guy going to magic conventions because I was always way too shy. And I always felt I wasn't part of that group because I wasn't a finger flinging close up guy. I was a school show guy. And we've always had to struggle for our position on the podium, you know? So I would recommend those. It depends on your, you know, your, it doesn't depend on your genre. I mean, I would love to go to a balloon twisting conference, something completely outside of my realm, you know, because you don't know, I might get an idea there. I might find something that, oh my gosh, I can take my magic knowledge and turn it into this. So I think it's a matter of going to multiple conferences. I've got a buddy that goes to a poetry conference every year. And he says he gets so inspired by that because of poetry alone, but just meeting people who are poets and who do, you know, live poetry. We just had an American Got Talent winner who was a live poetry guy, a vocal spoken word guy, tremendously incredible. So it's a matter of stepping outside your realm. Happily, though, you know, it's all online now. You can go and look at any kind of TED talk on anything nowadays. You know, you can search YouTube. You can see all these fantastic acts, which you're going to see at a magic convention. And those conventions really are, they're more to see your friends than they are to really learn anything, especially for the guys that are professionals. Because the top pros, you know, we've got our acts. We might get some ideas here and there. I will tell you one thing, though. My best piece of advice was given to me a long time ago. They said, when you go to the dealer room, don't have any money with you. You know, you say, because you're going to buy stuff, you're going to take it back to your hotel, and you're going to play with it. It's going to go home. It's going to end up in your drawer. He said, basically, you know, anything that's in the dealer room, you can buy later. You have to pay shipping and handling, you know, but you can buy later or save it for the last day, you know. Think about it. Don't just do these impulse purchases because you can spend a fortune really fast. And my friends who were dealers are going to hate me for saying this, you know, but if you're a struggling guy just starting off and money is tight and don't know what to buy, don't take any money to the dealer room. See what's out there. Go home and sleep on it, you know. Decide if you're really going to use it. Oh, I'm tempted, sorely tempted by so many cool close-up magic tricks I see advertised on the internet, but I would never use them, ever. I'd show my wife, she'd go, fine. And then I put it in my drawer, you know. I'm not that kind of guy who does that kind of stuff. So
that is so true. So true. Yeah. We've all got a box somewhere with stuff we bought and have never used.
Yeah, we do.
All right, as we get ready to wrap up, Doug, I want you to think
for sell that stuff.
As we get ready to wrap up, I want you to just for a minute think, and if you were talking to either a new performer or somebody that's been in business for years, but they asked you the question, Doug, what are the top three things that lead to becoming a successful performer? What would you say?
Well, first you got to define success. So what does success mean? Does success mean being happy doing what you're doing? You know, because if that's the case, then yeah. I read a book recently. Tim Ferriss, who's a podcaster I listen to, wrote a book called The Tribe of Mentors, which is a fantastic book because he interviews the top people in their field, you know, and how do they get to be successful? And one little mention jumped out at me. He said, success is not being rushed. You know, he says, success is not being pressed to do anything, you know. And when you're not rushed and you're not pushed into anything, you know, you've got the comfort and the relaxation of being able to do what you want to do at your own pace. That's true success. You know, no money involved, you know, none of that kind of stuff. It's doing what you want to do at your own pace. That is success. And I thought that was kind of deep. And I'm sure it's open for debate. We could talk about, you know, the pros and cons of that, but it jumped out at me. I thought that was really interesting. And as I get older too, when I show up at my school shows, I used to go, okay, I need 45 minutes to set up. I'm going to be there at, you know, 1:15 for the 2 o'clock show. And as I got older, I thought, well, that's just stupid. Why am I pushing myself? Why am I rushing to get this done? There could be all kinds of problems. So now I'll get there at, you know, 12:45 for a 2 o'clock show and have a cup of coffee in the parking lot, make some phone calls, and wander in when I feel like it. And I'm always too early, but man, the level of stress comes way down. So what is success? So I would say the first thing is to recognize success has nothing to do with money. You know, so it goes back to what I said earlier. Don't do this for the money. Don't do it for happiness. Do it for joy. Do it for what you want to do. I think if you do that, the money will eventually follow. Of course, money is very important. We know that. But there's 100 different ways you can make money. certainly, you know, even we all learned that during the COVID shutdown. I've got friends that are movers now because they have the van. But hey, you got to do what you got to do for a buck. I guess the second thing is you have to be different. That's the danger of going to this magic conventions and conferences. You see what everybody else is doing and you go home and you start doing it. And you don't want to do that. You want to go there and be inspired to do something else. You know, we go and we look at the top guys today and go, oh my God, this guy's brilliant. And they put out these fantastic books with fantastic routines. And that's great. But I would never do any of those routines the same way because you're just like that guy. And then everyone else who bought that book is suddenly thinks just like that guy. So you got to be different to be successful. Take those routines, the books, ideas, conventions, and things you learn and simply use them as springboards for something else. Let them bake and marinate. And then my best ideas I get in the shower. You know, you're in the shower just thinking about nothing. And suddenly you realize, oh my God, I can add this to this and this. And now I got something brand new. You know, I can fold laundry in my kayak, you know, if I want to. And of course, the third thing is you got to have multiple products. You know, Amazon didn't get successful by selling books. You know, they got successful by selling everything. And you can't be a jack of all trades. You're not going to be an expert at everything. Carol Fox, who was one of my mentors, who was a very successful trade show and corporate magician, you know, back in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, he was a general practitioner. I think he coined that phrase where he was good at a little bit of everything, you know. And so you can take that approach. But I think the better approach is to laser focus on one market, just be the best you can be at it. And it sounds a little arrogant to say, but if you think you're the best at something, you have to keep proving it every day. You know, you want to say that you're the best in this particular avenue, but there's always someone on your heels. So you got to keep on improving. And if you got the mindset that you are the best, you're going to be chased and you're going to keep running, you know, and you're going to stay the best. It's not to run out and say, I'm the best at this or I'm the best at that because people think you're an ass, you know, but it's certainly an internal motivation. If you want to be at the top of your game, I think you have to internalize that chase and that race and try to stay on top. There was a guy when I started doing school shows, he was real popular. You know, he was the guy I had to beat. You know, I never told him I was going after him. I would never told him I was going after his market, but he was the guy I had to beat and I had to be better, you know? And so that's what kind of drove me to be where I'm at today with the 12 different shows and the approach that I take. So those, to wrap that up, don't do it for money, be different, and have multiple things to sell your clients. Those are my three, I think, big keys to be successful.
Great advice. Great advice. Now, Doug, I know you have some products available, things that will help other magicians and other performers out. Tell us a little bit about the things that people can get from you.
Oh, that's super generous of you. I didn't know you were going to ask me. I made a website called DougShear.com, and my last name is S-C-H-E-E-R. So if you look for DougsCheer.com, you will find my website, Doug's Cheer, D-O-U-G. S-C-H-E-E-R. And I've got some of my full routines. I got a routine called Punctuation Pandemonium, which is great for school show performers doing reading shows. It's a great thing for MCs. In fact, I've got, there's a variety show down in Pigeon Forge looking at using the Punctuation Pandemonium as an MC bit during their variety show this summer. So I'm excited to see if that happens. I've also got some books. I've got some of my shows available on, available for purchase, so you can watch what I do and possibly either be inspired or just laugh at me and say, this guy's an idiot. I will never do it that way. But at least I tell you, that's funny too. I say that, but you know what? You can learn more by watching a bad performer than you can learn by watching a really good one. I think because you can go, oh my gosh, he made a huge mistake here, huge mistake there, huge mistake there, you know, or even if you don't recognize those mistakes, you kind of see what happens afterwards, you know. You know, he just told the kids to shut up. Oh, no, you can't do that because now they're going to yell at you. It's like, you know, so, I appreciate any support people give me. Check out my website, you know, and I hope everyone's successful right now. It's kind of a crazy time to even think about getting back on the road and doing shows, but it's coming. It's coming. It's coming. It's coming. And we're all going to be there sooner before you know it, I hope.
I do, too. I think we are getting near the end of this thing. Or at least I'm hoping that's the case. Well, Doug, I appreciate you taking the time today to sit down and talk with me and share some of your wisdom and experience. And just really want to say thanks.
Keith, I appreciate your invite, man. Just to put me on this podcast alone speaks volumes to what you think about me. I hope I lived up to your expectations. So thank you.
It was great, Doug. Thank you so much. If you like what you've been hearing on this podcast, I invite you to go wherever you're listening to this episode and leave us a comment or review. Tell me what you love about this episode, or better yet, tell me what you want to hear more of in the future.